Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. It's nice to see so many people here on Saturday night. I was just wondering if it's the dukkha of the day after Valentine's Day brought everybody here. But, maybe not. I think it's one thing, too, I've been reflecting about is that last night, at say midnight, was the midpoint of the retreat. So on the downward part of the bell curve, but still a lot of time left in the retreat, and we've actually have a lot of momentum going behind us. A lot of effort has been put in, and like I say, it is really nice to see so many people here. It's like we're all, you know, everybody here seems to be regularly have been plugging in, and so it's not just the residents who live here, but also the extended community is also benefiting from the retreat, and we're benefiting from your being here, and hopefully you're benefiting from our practice as well. And, you know, just that reflection that, you know, we are halfway through the retreat, it does bring up that sense of urgency. Can't, you know, be a good time to sort of just, you know, recommit to the practice. And I think for the next, at least for the next week, maybe longer, we'll be doing the morning practice on our own and group practice in the afternoon. And I suspect at some point we'll have a much more open schedule or be practicing on our own and really, you know, just determined to, you know, make the best use of that time. The also the weather, and listening to people, you know, come in at the mealtime and talking is, it's also brought up a, you know, kind of a sense of urgency as well. And that you know, somebody today was you know, commenting that Lake Mendocino, which is the, you know, the biggest you know, source of water, for at least for people, you know, on city water in the areas, like, you know, they say you can completely walk across Lake Mendocino now because it's so dry. And you know, hearing kind of stories about that, or, you know, just hearing how, you know, all over the state that, you know, the lakes are at, you know, almost dry. And there can be this, you know, sort of sense of fear or panic, you know, kind of set in. I can feel that in myself, just sort of, you know, lots of times over the many years, you know, hearing stories about climate change and hearing climatologists or, you know, various scientists talking about, you know, the climate changing and, you know, how that might affect, you know, the planet. And it can always be the sort of sense of, oh, that's off in the future, you know, that, you know, even now they're still, you know, kind of talking, you know, maybe 100 years off that, you know, California, you know, may not be habitable, kind of like the coast of Australia, where it's just, you know, very few places in that country are actually habitable, and the rest is all barren and rocky. And it's about the same size country as the continental U.S., you know. And, yeah, but even sort of, you know, thinking about that, like, well, yeah, 100 years from now we'll be habitable, but the change might happen very slowly. And, well, I mean, it's not going to all happen at once. It's not like today it's habitable, but tomorrow it won't be. It's going to be, you know, like these droughts. This one might end. You know, we might get some water, but then, you know, who knows, it might come back. And so there's this sort of sense that, at least the, you know, the entire time I've lived here, there's been a, you know, there's that continuity of winter brings rain, and So it just it has brought up this sort of sense in me that things are much more uncertain. It's like, I think this is the first winter I've sort of lived here where it just really has sort of had that sense of, yeah, climate change might actually really be happening. It's the first time my experience in life or that's there. I'm not saying it is or that I know about. There's people that don't believe that that's what's happening. There's been droughts in the past, but you know, you can also worry about it and can send you off in a negative mind states, or you even cause you to sort of a sense of, well, I what am I doing being a monk? I should get out there and sort of fight for the environment. And but for me, it's just the opposite of that sense of sort of letting go of the worldly. And conditions are such right now that this particular day today was perfect for practice. We do have the monastery, we do have supportive conditions. I think all of us ate today. Group practice of chanting harmoniously, meditation together. Now a chance to reflect on some Dhamma. And then tonight, we'll have go back to our cabins, and tomorrow morning still have a chance to practice. So it just, to me, it's like that's where it's kind of more important. It was, as I was sitting here, I was thinking, because it is actually raining right now, sort of just before the talk, just sort of like, oh, the sound of the rain is just so beautiful, and how precious and valuable that is. And I was kind of trying to think of how to get out of giving a Dhamma talk. I was thinking, how would I just listen to the rain? That's really valuable. And it's like, no, it's actually, the Dhamma is much more valuable than the rain. One thing I was kind of contemplating or wanting to talk about was the supportive conditions and supporting each other in the practice. And and I guess in particular looking at that in terms of communal harmony and then how we interact and get along with each other. And they brought up a couple years ago I was doing some study on the 10 perfections, the paramis. And it's kind of interesting that at the time when I started doing that, there really weren't any compilations or any books that I could find that were kind of out there on that. And just after I kind of did all this kind of research, Ajahn Sucitto came out with his book on the Bharamis. We have a really good collection of Dhamma talks on our computer. And but even that it's not really easy to find a lot of the material, because I was thinking about this in terms of like I would go online and onto the computer and pull up Dhamma talks I was listening to and in the afternoons, and like taking one of the Bharamis, like say generosity or Dana, and you type in the name of that, and there might be a few talks that were titled that. I suspect like in the maybe thousands of Dhamma talks we have of, say, like Lumbar Samedo, he probably talked about it, dozens of times, or if not, as an entire Dhamma talk, he mentioned it in various ways, dozens of times. But, very few Dhamma talks would actually sort of pop up in terms of that particular title. But there were enough there that I was able to, sort of listen to them or talk to other people and find out what Dhamma talks they would recommend on those titles. And I did find it interesting that most Dhamma talks are those titles of the perfections. You might find five or six kind of titles, but I typed in Virya for energy, and I think like 30 talks came up. It was like 10 times almost more than any other talks, and it was all of them were by Ajahn Pasano. I think maybe it was a winter retreat. I think he had taken the notes of Ajahn Sucitto that he had done a Barry Center for Buddhist Studies or did some study course, and you know, Ajahn Pasna had taken the notes and then kind of maybe fleshed them out and spent a month kind of going over those. But it was just kind of funny that energy was the one that had the most, appropriately, had the most kind of Dhamma talks to it. But one of the perfections that I'm kind of thinking about is the Satcha Parami, which is often translated as, say, truthfulness. And it comes up in, like, the Four Noble Truths, Arya Satcha. There were three kind of Dhamma talks that came up on that from the computer, and one was by Ajahn Viradamo, one was Ajahn Sucitto, which was the talk from Ajahn Sucitto was kind of, I think, the impetus or the base for the book he produced, even though it's very different in the book, but it was like a series of talks he gave, I think, to on each of the different perfections over a 10-week period that kind of was spurring him on in his thinking about the book. And then I think Bhikkhu Bodhi had done a course or two on the 10 perfections, and so he had some talks on those as well. And the one thing I really appreciated about, say, Ajahn Sucitto when he was talking about it was this truthfulness. You know, it's like, I guess there's two different kind of aspects of, you know, looking at it. One is just that truthfulness of, say, you know, right speech. Just it's different in, say, than the perfection of sila, of say morality, because it's much more kind of geared towards directly, you know, towards speech. And the other way of talking about it that it was really kind of really struck me, and more also in terms of say meditation practice and you know, learning how to live in community, is this sort of, you know, like inner truth, this truth of really being honest with ourselves about our intentions and in the way we kind of think about things, or the way we, you know, that I guess the way I'm kind of seeing it is like that very first impulse, like when something happens, when we react to something, somebody comes into a room and says something to us, or does something, and what is that initial impulse? What is that initial reaction? And one way of this truthfulness is to kind of develop it. It takes a lot of mindfulness, and so it's learning to be able to come back to slowing down and really being aware of our mind states and really truthfully seeing how we do view things, because it's really simple. It's very easy to be in a situation where something comes up that maybe annoys us, and then to kind of make some sort of snide comment or some sort of sarcastic comment to let the person know that we're not really pleased with what they just did, but at the same time sort of do it in a humorous way that doesn't really we think isn't going to hurt them, but we kind of let them know that that's not appreciated or something like that. And so it's in situations like that, in community, it's like when we do kind of act in that way, or act in that way, that the intention behind it is I think it's really well. I mean, everybody kind of gets that sense of really where it was coming from, even though it might be kind of said as a joke or said in a light manner. It's like if it's coming from aversion, it's I think most people kind of pick up on it, and then there's a negative reaction back to that. And so just that learning how to be more and more honest with ourselves of when we're in reaction, to be able to kind of own up to that and to see that, like, okay, that's where I'm really coming from, and some, you know, just some ways that, you know, really, really help in this is of course slowing down. As Ajahn Pasano just mentioned last night, the one of the, you know, teachings of Ajahn Pasano was to, or of Ajahn Chah was to, you know, eat little, sleep little, talk little. And I had a funny story about that when I was in Thailand for my year away as a monk. Ajahn Nyanadhamma wasn't teaching very much, just kind of basically at the end of the Patimokkha chanting, he'd give a short reflection, and any teaching he was doing was to the lay people, and it was in Thai, and so I didn't speak Thai, so I was getting very little instruction. And then he after the Patimokkha, he gave that reflection about talking little, sleeping little, eating little. And this happened to be the very next day I was on the phone with Ajahn Pasano about some business. And I kind of told him this, and I was saying, you know, I had been thinking about, you know, asking Ajahn Nyanadhamma if he actually realized he wasn't actually teaching that much. But I told Ajahn Pasano, so I kind of had the realization that, yeah, if I can master that teaching, then maybe I can ask for some more teachings. And I think Ajahn Pasano said something like, yeah, you can ask him in your next lifetime. Hope he wasn't having visions and omens at that time. But there is a I can see a real importance of slowing down and when we feel that impulse to speak, to just to slow down on that, to just bringing more attention and mindfulness to what the intention is before we do speak. And and kind of related here on the same sort of topic, Ajahn Chitto is saying, one thing is to when we kind of are working at that, looking at what our intentions are and just being honest with ourselves. It's one thing we'll see is that we really strongly have this tendency to project onto other people, and when you just kind of slow down and can see that, okay, I do have. When this happens, I have this idea, or I have this thought, or this projection. One way to look at it too is to just to be able to stop and to question that. To really ask yourself, is that really true? Again, this is talking about satya, truthfulness. Is that assumption really true, or is even having any sort of projection onto somebody, is that really being truthful? Like Lumbor last night again was talking about this sort of, seeing things the way, this is the way it is. And so then when we start, presupposing or, judging things and sort of having an opinion about the way this person is or the way the situation is, we've already clouded that over. We actually are no longer really seeing things the way they are. We're seeing it the way that we're projecting it to be, and in a way that's not satya. It's not viewing the world in the way of a perfection. We're seeing it clouded or in some form of delusion. And so it's learning to slow down, but then it's to actually start questioning that first impulse, or that when the mind says that about somebody. And we might really believe it, like when we say that, like, okay, oh, he's always like this, or she's always like that. And like, well, is that actually true, or is that person really that way, or do I really know all of the circumstances, or we can start seeing that that we really don't know, the whole picture, or if we kind of. Change. Sometimes it's just changing our attitude towards that situation or that person. Can completely change it. Like if we view that person as somebody who's hostile or an enemy, then we start filtering everything that person does through that lens, and or if we view that person as, you know, being someone who's good and positive, then, you know, we can filter out the negative things that they do and not see those things, and you know, and always sort of just keep accumulating the positive aspects, and you know, neither one of those are really seeing things truly the way they really are. You know, to think it's more wholesome in the you know, to you know, if you have a negative impression of somebody, to, you know, to try to focus more on the positive, just to kind of, you know, shake that the misperceptions that we're seeing, just to see that fixed view that I had is not accurate, and that you know, it can be changed. And when you start doing this, you can actually see really clear. Well, Ajahn Amaro used to always talk during the winter retreats, and he'd always I remember he, for some reason, it always came up, particularly during the winter retreats. He'd always use this phrase. He'd say, "You know, stop creating each other." And one reason I think this phrase sort of kept coming up is when we are in silence. And I've talked about this before. Like when we are in silence and not talking to each other, you know, we have a way of perceiving each other from our speech patterns. You know, or when we're in say work community, the work activities, and interacting with each other and talking, we pick up, you know, a lot of cues about how each other are feeling. You know, if this person is in a good mood, a jokey mood, or if they're, you know, maybe really, you know, quiet, and you know, just get a sense that they don't want to be disturbed, you can pick up a lot of that through speech. And they might be giving, you know, visual cues, but you know, they might be kind of ambiguous. But for me, anyway, it's like speech really. It seems more clear. Maybe it's not, but you know, you have lots of different cues that you can sort of piece together. Okay, facial expression looks like this. The body posture looks like that, and this is what his speech sounds like. So, yeah, he's in a good mood. I can go ask him something. Or, but then when you take away any of those sort of cues, you really don't know. So you might see someone coming in with kind of a frowny expression on their face, and then you get really afraid of them, or start thinking that they don't like you or something like that. And so, you know, Ajahn Amaro was always, you know, in that kind of situation. So, you know, stop creating each other, because like you really don't know. But for the longest time, I never really understood what he was talking about when he would give these kind of teachings. And but just, you know, looking at this Satchadhamma, you know, I can see it much more clearly that, you know, that when we do, you know, put these projections onto people, that then the way we start reacting to them, or the way we interact with them, then is we can actually create, we can actually cause that person to act in those particular ways. Like if I think you're a good person, then you know, I do things to actually reinforce that. You know, might do something nice to make you smile, or might do something to make you do something that makes you a nice person. Or if I have the opposite view, then I might say something or be rude or impolite, and then you act in a, you know, shocked or startled way, and that reinforces, that proves my point. Yeah, you're a difficult person. So, and you know, just having these projections on people, you know, we help to create that real environment. You actually, we're in a very real way. We can, you know, like if you're in a bad mood and you come into a room and everybody's actually in a neutral mood, or you know, not in any mood at all. Really, neutral is a good way of phrasing it. And then we come in and do something hostile. You know, we do completely change people's moods. So it's projection can do that. And you know, so a lot of it is just realizing that we are of that nature. You know, we are of the nature to project and that we have that tendency. And then that's another thing that we, you know, you can start investigating with mindfulness, sort of taking apart and really seeing if that's, you know, true, the projections we're having, and why do we do that? You know, what are we getting from it? Often just seeing the stress of it, you know, just having that, having to uphold that, or, you know, trying to continually support that kind of mind structure. And when you really kind of see the stress involved in that, you know, letting that go, it is kind of fun when you actually sort of catch yourself, you know, having a projection about somebody, and then, you know, deconstructing that. You can actually see the kind of the tensions falling away. You know, having a view about somebody that they're too loud or something, and then just stopping, questioning, is that really true? And then, you know, just sort of just try to hold in your mind the complete opposite view of that, or actually, you know, start looking for examples of where the person isn't loud, or maybe, you know, trying to understand why they are loud, and just seeing it in a different light. And it can actually be, you know, kind of, you know, fun. It's also another way of sort of bringing in mindfulness, just bringing up an avenue of how to investigate, or how to look, just seeing things in a different perspective. And with all of these, you know, the perfections, you know, looking at this one, just such a part of me. They're also, you know, so they actually, all 10 of them, you know, support each other. So it's a, the 10 are generosity, sila, morality, renunciation, wisdom, determination, adhidhana, satya, is truthfulness, what is it, wisdom, panya, that was the fourth one, and metta, upeka, and I say adhidhana, determination. And you can see how, you know, like, you know, in trying to, you know, bring up this quality of truthfulness, especially this sort of sense of, you know, just really trying to see things really as they are, and not projecting in that sense. You know, it does take, like, say, the first one I was talking about was just that renunciation, sort of, you know, letting, just slowing down, being able to be more mindful. I can also see that in terms of, like, dana, just, you know, when we stop projecting on people, we're actually giving them more space to sort of be who they are, giving ourselves that, you know, generosity of you know, say, letting go of the dukkha, the stress that's caused in having that sense of projection, and, the, you know, trying to hold that, trying to, you know, keep that perception going. So there's, you know, dana, you know, having a determination to, you know, to take on this kind of practice, to really want to, you know, be able to see things more honestly, more truthfully, be more honest about ourselves and what we really are feeling, and you know, taking responsibility for that. And there's also, you know, think of in terms of loving kindness, just, you know, the kindness that's involved in that. So it does seem kind of a little, I would say, yeah, kind of weird to be talking about sort of having interactions with each other, you know, while we're kind of in silence. But, you know, as I mentioned, it's, you know, it's not all about, say, you know, verbal interactions. You know, it's when we do live in community, we're all, you know, pitching in to do things and you know, looking after the monastery and looking after each other. And you know, our you know, bodily actions, or you know, intentions of our bodily actions and our mental actions. We can feel that with each other, and there is some communications happening, and there are instances where we do need to be in contact, or and so just bringing that to mind, and having that be a support of for our entire say meditation practice, and and how we support each other in the monastic life. It is the day after one pro, and so I sometimes have a tendency to talk a long time, and so I'm going to maybe make this one short to make up for the ones that have been longer. So I'll leave this for our contemplation. And
Namayang Amakataya Sarukaran Hamase.